Fun diversion. What food would you have to pass by that you could not not eat? Because if you say grape, I'm going to throw my notes at you.
It's not a grape.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a raisin.
Oh, God. No! Sounded and looked like if you're cutting through a baguette, it's a very stiff bread. You got it like a serrated knife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So similar. But he could only get in like half an inch, and it's like, and it is not pleasant. And it's right. Good that they cut away then.
Right. But again, they didn't really shy away from even showing it. With this kind of a movie, I think you would, more people would be worried about like showing that. They cut away from.
Cut away from the amputation scene. Good one.
What's that plan? At this point, the doctor's just kind of like taking Pedro aside and being like, dude, you care about your sister. You need to go ahead and just take her away from all this, cross the border, leave Spain behind and everything. But Pedro's a rebel and he can't just up and leave his cause because he's a rebel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. The only thing in my notes between her getting the attic room and the creepy song and when we go back to her for the next task, the only thing I have in my notes about the entire time in the cave is I'ma have to take that leg and how they gone wander back covered in amputation blood. Because when I'm taking short notes, I don't write out the whole word sometimes. It's not a whole sentence.
That's smart.
I'ma have to take that leg and how they get back without being covered in blood.
But later on, you see the doctor talking to Pedro and he says he should leave with Mercedes. And when Pedro goes to Mercedes, she's like, here's the key to the storage, a key that she.
It's a secret copy of the key that the captain has.
The captain believes he only has one copy. And Mercedes, I think she just kind of is like, I hate myself because I'm serving this guy who is just the absolute worst and I'm such a coward. And her brother is such a sweetheart. And he's like, no, you're fine.
He leans in and gives her a cuddle. That gave him extra Pedro points.
Oh.
Hey, we're up to at least 75 Pedro points.
Mm-hmm. Pedro Patreon level.
good times.
So those two scenes kind of like bookend the scene with Ophelia and the task that she has on hand, which is essentially drawing a door with the chalk, opening it up, going in and avoiding eating food on a table so she can follow the fairies, get whatever they tell her to get. And
she has that key. She has to unlock a thing and get a thing.
Right. And so basically she has to go into this room to get the thing. And if she's in there, there is an inhuman monster.
His character name is the Pale Man.
Mm-hmm. And there's this bounty of food on the table, and the Fawn tells her, do not eat anything off of that.
I got some critiques at the beginning of this. Okay, first of all, she draws a tiny door. All right, that's a preference. I'm a big girl, I'd want a bigger door. She sets the timer after she gets in there. So she's already shortened her time.
Right.
And also she waits like half the timer to get moving and let the fairies out who are there specifically to guide her to do the thing.
Right. She's on a time limit. And I feel like because it's an hourglass, in theory, she should have about an hour.
It looked like a 3-minute egg timer.
It kind of did. It didn't help that like when she actually gets in past the door, it looks like has taken up a lot. And in the span of the movie, it's like she just flipped it over and then half's gone.
Yeah.
So anyways.
Yep. The timer thing, I know. If somebody in a movie goes underwater and you start holding your breath with them, like I do, like if somebody's like, we've only got 10 seconds till the, like in Fifth Element, when Corbin says, count to 10. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And Rowdy Rob starts going, 1, 2. I start counting two, and I'm like, 1, 2. It is like 30 seconds later that the bomb actually goes off, and it's unacceptable. So when the timer started going, I started like,
yeah.
And there was like no good payoff. I was more like, it serves you right. Get stuck in there. You're bad with timers.
Yeah. And she does. She goes through there. She follows the fairies. And then she sees the Pale Man, also played by Doug Jones, and probably the most iconic character in this entire movie. You do not have to know anything about Pan's Labyrinth to know that the Pale Man is the guy who has no eyes. And then he puts his eyes into his hands and he puts his hands up to his face, which is the most inefficient way to see anything.
It's based on, I believe, a Japanese ghost.
Huh, okay.
I don't remember the name of it. It was, I would fake it, but I just can't remember, but it's like...
That's okay. I mean, it's creepy as all get out. Like, yeah. That is like the stuff of nightmares.
It really is. Okay, so one factoid I did read. Okay, so this movie got 3 Oscars, right? Which is really fantastic. But at the premiere, Stephen King sat next to Guillermo. And when this character came on, Stephen King got the heebie-jeebies so bad that he's like screaming around in his seat. And Guillermo's like, that was better. That was equivalent or better than any award.
That is the Stephen King seal of approval.
Yes.
Yes. Also, fun fact, the Pale Man is played by Doug Jones, who does the body work for the Fawn. He was also a clown in Batman Returns.
You always get your throwback. We got Tusk, Fish. We got Batman Returns, Fish. We got
Doug Jones in Batman Returns.
And then we got Doug Jones as 2 characters.
So does this mean that we...
I think they should always be connected.
I'm just, if we want to keep this going, which I think we should, we're going to have to really plan out our movies. And I think that...
I don't think we have to. I think it's that celebrity game we used to play at Sherry's late at night. Oh. You remember that? Where you like name an actor and then like you'd name something they were in and then you had to name another person in that and then you went around in circles.
I don't think I ever played that.
Oh, snap. It's hilarious. I would say something like Bill Murray and Jonathan would say Groundhog's Day. And then you'd say that chick from that hair commercial. And then I would be like, oh, some other early 90s piece where you wear a sundress with lots of flowers on it.
I see the game that you're playing.
Right? But we do that but with our podcast.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, what if the next movie we choose doesn't have anything in there?
It always will.
Okay.
Fish to a fish and a Doug Jones to a Doug Jones.
Okay, there we go.
Or we could do Oliver and Company. You can sing bits of it. You can have up to 20 seconds.
Okay. So she goes in. She grabs the thing. She sees
the fairies point to a little door that she's supposed to unlock. And she goes, no, not that one. Mm-hmm. And goes over and opens a different one and actually gets the thing, which is a shiny golden dagger.
Mm-hmm. And before she sees that, she sees like there's these murals up on the wall of this pale man.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. He doesn't have a face. And he's sitting at the table with his hands down. And he's just straight faced in it. But he's not moving. His hands are still, but in front of him, there's a plate with eyeballs on it. She picks up the plate with the eyeballs on it, looks at them like she, I don't.
I would be so concerned with the murals of the other kids getting eaten. I would be especially concerned with the shoes. There are shoes just piled up in a corner.
I'm so sorry for the reference, but like a Nazi concentration camp, there's a pile of dusty shoes from children that this animal has eaten. It's not an animal. It's a monster.
It's a monster. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So she got the dagger. And she's walking back.
She's walking back and she gets entranced by like the juiciest grape.
It looks like somebody smacked the back of her head. She's like,
oh, it's a grape. And it's maybe it's like magic on it. It's supposed to be like intriguing in some way.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it would have to. Okay. Fun diversion. What food would you have to pass by that you could not eat? Because if you say grape, I'm going to throw my notes at you.
It's not a grape.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a raisin.
Oh, God. No!
We had this whole exchange where I was like, I like oatmeal raisin cookies. I mean, but
because
I
understand. Because of the frog dying scene, it was pretty good.
But I mean, it wouldn't be a raisin. It wouldn't be a grape. I will tell you that. I think it would change. Like if it's in the middle of the summer and I'm hot and sweating, it's going to be watermelon because that stuff is refreshing. If it's in the middle of winter, watermelon's not going to be nearly as interesting. I guess the one thing would probably be bacon.
Okay, like good traditional answer.
Like nice crispy bacon.
I'm going to go solidly with a nectarine. Mm-hmm. Okay, admittedly, they were freshly washed grapes. You could see that they had you could tell it was cold, like a nice cold grape.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I offset by the demon-looking mother sitting behind you.
It kind of puts everything off. Even my bacon-loving self is like...
Live to bacon another day.
Yeah. I mean, wait until you get 18 and you can buy your own bacon with all your money and then you can cook it on your own and...
Applauders. She ignores the little fairies. She's got 3 companion fairies, right?
Right.
Because you need 2 expendable companion fairies for this scene.
Cheech and Chong?
Labeled in the credits apparently as Cheech and Chong. Credits. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I just got to look from our producer. The 2 additional fairies other than Twiggy...
Mm-hmm. Twiggy was our name. Twiggy, I don't know.
I don't know if Twiggy has a name.
Yeah.
But the other 2 are Cheech and Chong. And it says, oh, sorry, spoiler, rest in peace in the credits. Okay, so when she goes for the grapes, they're like, no, except they don't make noises. They just get in front of her and
yeah, and she's just like, go away.
Yeah, and she like really does flick them away, but they're really adamant and they haven't acted like that towards her before. So I'm wondering why she's just so dismissive. That child eats two grapes.
You had said that at one point someone had what you had read online is that she's like curiously disobedient.
Which is a good descriptor. It's just that when death is staring at you, let it go.
I mean, technically death isn't staring at her. It's on death a plate.
Death's eyeballs. Next to her. It's so important that death's eyeballs are out of its face on a tiny silver platter, just waiting to go right back into death's face.
Right, right. She kind of just does what she wants to do, and nobody can stop it. Her actions, though, don't just bring the pale man up. It also kills two of the fairies. Like, he like takes one, bites the head off, and then takes the other and bites the head off.
Because, yeah, she's frozen in fear, and so they're like, until she gets out of this, we got to distract him. So they're flying around his head, being the real heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And he manages to grab two of them, surprisingly not Twiggy.
Well, because those two die to save the main character. That's probably why they got names.
I'm with it. But here's the thing. She shakes herself out of it, runs towards the door, which is now closing because Chick can't use a timer.
Right.
And it shuts in her face. I feel vindicated.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Yeah.
She earned that.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. If you are a magical fawn and you give magical chalk to a magical girl and you're sending her to a magical land and you're like, this magical door will only last as long as this magical sand thing.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't tell her she could draw a second door. And then she does. And that's how she gets out. She draws a door on the ceiling, pushes it up. To her credit, can do a pull up, which I cannot do.
Yeah.
And then shuts the door behind her. Question. Wouldn't that door stay open until the timer ran out, which she didn't get a chance to reset because it was on the outside?
I don't know. She did close the door behind her. So maybe that's what triggered it to close.
Applauders. The door seals.
Yeah.
After her when she closes it, like a hatch. Right.
And it almost looked like she had used the... I could be wrong about this, but I thought she had used the chalk, like tested it out, but she may not have... I just kind of got that sneaking suspicion that she tested out the chalk to make sure that it did actually work, but it may not have. I could be getting that wrong, so.
I don't know. She seemed pretty chalk ignorant. Anyways, that spooky thing is over.
Yeah. And then, you know, we see the scene with the doctor, Pedro, and Mercedes. Mercedes calling herself a coward. And then we see Ophelia take mandrake root, puts it into the milk, gives it a couple of drops of blood, and puts it under her mom's bed. As she's putting it under there, the captain and the doctor come in, and the doctor just, like, you know, says, oh, her fever's gone down. And the captain says, if you have to save one, make sure it's my son. And Ophelia hears that.
God, he's such a piece of garbage.
When they leave, she gets out. Her mom's still asleep.
How did she bite her finger hard enough to draw blood, by the way? Because I can only do that if I, like, get a hangnail.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure. I think it was probably just like a special effect thing. Like,
well, you actually, in the goof section of the IMDb, it says that you can, and I watched it when we watched the second time, she bites a little blood capsule and you can actually see the capsule as she squeezes it into the mandrake.
But she comes out, she's talking to her brother and she's like,
I wrote, nothing creepy about beseeching your unborn brother for mercy on your mother face to uterus.
She does say, I will make you a prince in my kingdom. A kingdom that may not actually exist.
Yeah. There.
Anyways.
Now we're outside.
Yeah. And they get an explosion at a train.
Okay. Guys, I want you to, if you're in driving right now, I want you to smack the dashboard like you just heard something really upsetting. Because here's the thing. These guys are dying, starving in the woods. They can't find tobacco. They can't find like any of these bare necessities. But they can get massive amounts of explosives.
Yeah.
And sorry.
They're rebels. They have it somewhere, right? Mm. I'm assuming. Just have it stockpiled. But here's my complaint about this. They make an explosion on the train, make a huge mess for everyone, and it makes the captain ride out. And they don't take anything off of the train. I mean, for me, if I were doing this, I would be like taking something off of the train. Not taking anything just seems like a huge red flag. And the captain seems...
Because it was obviously a diversion.
And they messed up the train so bad. The conductor is like, they just made this huge mess. And then the captain's like, what do they take? And it's like, They didn't take anything. And then the captain's like, oh.
To the Batcave!
Yeah. So they go back to the mill.
Oh, because then there's another explosion. There's a second explosion. Because they are so flush with explosive materials, these rebels.
Which they didn't actually need to use because they had a key to the storage unit. They could have just fired off their weapons.
Yeah.
And then they could have just gone into the storage unit, taken what they needed, closed it all back up. Though people would have seen them do that. So it doesn't really matter that they would have done that. But anyways, I think the explosion back at the mill was probably just as unnecessary. Though we don't know. Maybe the battle just, maybe they weren't planning on doing an explosion. And they were just like, no, we had to for certain reasons.
So then this is the battle scene, right? Like, this is where they're shooting it up in the woods and we find out.
Well, the captain goes back to the mill, sees, you know, that everything is...
Stuff got jacked.
And then
takes a big notice of the lock.
Yeah. And then they go into the woods. And that's when they have the big battle scene. And some of the people are shot. And there you see the captain's men going up to each of the soldiers and shooting them in the head to make sure that they're not faking it and that they can go away. Mm-hmm. And they see a man.
They're also looking for people to interrogate.
Right. They find a couple of men who are alive. The first is he's bleeding from the throat and he can't talk. And then the captain is like holding up his gun and the guy's just like swapping at like, the gun.
He's dying and you should feel so bad. But if you've got a little bit of a dark sense of humor, the fact that he's just like sleepy kitty bapping it away, he's like, no, don't kill me. Yeah. No. It's terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's dark sense of humor. That's what we have. And then they find that another person is alive.
This one's alive. He's only got a hit in the leg.
Yeah, so they take him back, and then you see Mercedes here.
They got one.
And so she's like running through.
Suddenly, urgently has to go to the barn.
Yeah, and it's kind of obvious. You can see, like, even though she kind of keeps up a kind of the stone cold appearance at times, there are times where her emotions break through.
She's like, Pedro.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I get it, girl.
Yeah.
Make sure that fine brother is fine.
Yeah. I remember writing down, they got one alive. Pedro! No, it's not Pedro.
Yeah. She manages, before they shut her out of the barn, she manages to see that it's not Pedro. It is, in fact, our favorite only other rebel of important note.
The guy with the amputee leg. No, it's the guy who stutters.
It's the stuttery guy!
Which is interesting because the captain was like, we need to question one. And which one does he get? Guy who stutters.
I do love me a stutter. Can I just say?
Yeah. And so the next scene is...
No, not the next scene. you have to talk about how he's like, if you can count to three without a stutter.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah.
If you can count to three without stuttering, I will let you go. And guy's like, I doubt it. Except he doesn't say it. And he looks to the captain or other guard behind him. He's like, would anybody question me if I said he could go? He's like, no. And
yeah.
So he's like, all right, count. And he gets from one to two. And then he gives the most heartbreaking smile.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, all you have to do is say three.
Yeah. And he can't do it because this captain is such a fool. I mean, seriously. It's like, I'm going to go ahead. This is really where the torturing starts for the captain. When he sees the stutter come through, he just loves being evil in the same way that I love a $10 tin of cookies that you can only get at Fred Meyer's during the holidays.
Oh, yeah. With the pretzel-shaped one? With the sugar on?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's the best. This is what he does. And my whole thing, if I were to change one thing in this movie, it would be that the stuttering guy does not take that. That he instead just tells him to f off.
Oh, yes. That you would change his stuttery three.
Yeah.
Where he doesn't actually get the whole word out. He just goes
th.
And he just knows he's done for. But yeah, it's like the Spanish
word for one.
If it started the same way and he just stuttered his way into a f you, I would be into it. If he was just like th.
Yeah. And okay. So, and then you see, you know, like, oh no, torture. More torture is going to come down on this guy. And the captain's super happy about it. The next scene is the Fawn coming to Ophelia. And, you know, for the fact that she got two of his fairies killed, she owns up to her mistake.
I had an accident.
Yeah. And then he kind of just goes off on her. And
He's like, you can never return.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah. And I like how Twiggy kind of ratted her out.
Oh, yes. She opens up the box and only one fairy flies out. And she like flies straight to his ear and is like, And he's like, what?
You can never go home. And just, yeah. Seeing similarities between Mercedes and Ophelia, Mercedes sees someone in the rebellion who could very easily give away her position. Ophelia has pretty much just lost the ability to go back.
Yes, like the opportunity for escape is now closing.
Yeah. When movies have a three-act structure, there's like this aspect at the end of the second act where it's like the hero's lowest point. And so both of them, kind of the heroes, this is their lowest point.
Well, I'm not exactly sure because there are a couple scenes coming up that get a lot darker. So anyways, now we go to, the guy's been tortured.
Right. The doctor comes in.
The guy fesses up. He goes, I talked.
Yeah. And asks the doctor to kill him. Asks the doctor to kill him as the captain sees.
Yes.
A little vial.
Why?
Yeah. Yeah.
This, okay, like, it makes, I scribbled furiously at this point because remember back way 3,000 years ago at the campfire, they found antibiotics there, right? Mm-hmm. He holds it up and he shakes it and stuff. And then this scene, he's standing around and being like, the doctor's going to tend to the guy so I can beat him some more. And he looks down at the doctor kit. He sees the vial, right? He picks up the vial. He holds it up and he shakes it like he did over by the fire. Then he has to like go to his office and go to his desk and open it up and pull out another vial and then like be able to shake them next to each other like some freaking sad children's TV show scientist.
He just must not have like a long-term memory. How many vials would actually look that way? I mean, if there's only one doctor in the village and you see this, why would you want to just run away from one, your interrogated victim, mm-hmm. and the doctor? I mean, do you really...
Did the doctor betray me? I better leave him alone with this guy who betrayed me.
What's worse is after the captain goes and confirms the suspicions, he hears Ophelia rustling around in the room. Yes,
because he's going to go mess with the doctor, but he hears a noise where his wife is, and his ultra protective, self-possessed goals just lose their freaking minds.
Yeah. And so he goes after Ophelia. He sees her underneath the bed and he, you know, pulls her out with the root and he's just like going off on her. And Carmen's just, she's kind of like woken up and she asks to just handle this.
We have had her pulled out from under the bed. The Mandrake, he's like, everyone is conspiring against me mode, which is the thing you pointed out earlier, which makes a lot of more sense than my, like, he's mad that his wife is being messed with because he doesn't have affection for her. It's all about the baby. Mm-hmm. And I still am mad that there's no real good clarity about why he's got such a bent about his dad. But Carmen is like, I'll deal with it. Like, she looks bad.
Yeah, she should not be handling this. The captain really shouldn't be handling this because he doesn't have the emotional maturity to, you know, raise a child.
She reassures him that she's going to take care of it. And he runs back out the door.
Right. So he can go to the doctor. Now, Carmen and Ophelia have this exchange where Ophelia says, but the Fawn said that if we do this, then you'll get better. And
she goes, magic doesn't exist.
And she throws the mandrake root in the fire saying, you'll have to learn that even if it hurts. And it kind of reminds me of like, could you imagine being in love with someone, having a child with them, and then they die? And then
the person or the child?
The person that you love.
Okay.
So it's just you and your child. At one point in the movie, Ophelia asked Carmen, why did you marry him? Carmen's like, well, I was alone. I was like, but I was with you. Why did you have to marry that man? And she's like, when you get older, you'll realize. And it's like, you were talking about there's no real romantic element in this movie. But Carmen kind of, I mean,
she only halfway had it because mm-hmm. remember at the dinner, she was shut down when she wanted to even have the glimmer of the how we met story, which is, by the way, when you're in a long-term relationship, you know, when somebody's like, so how'd you meet? And then you get to have this little moment where you're like, magic pixies and a fawn, you know, got us together before. No, like you get to say, you know, there's this time in my life when I didn't have this person I love. And now there's this time in my life when I do. And the journey from A to B can be long and boring. But like the thing that sparks the whole thing off is like super important. And
right. And Carmen kind of wants that romantic relationship, even if she doesn't necessarily get it. And
it's she found like the worst
yeah.
person to have a romantic relationship with.
Yeah. But I guess like, you know, right after a civil war in your country is not going to be the best time to be raising a child by yourself. So it makes sense why she would like cling to someone who
she had the tailoring shop.
Yeah. I think she could have made it work, but I guess there's just a part of me that thinks
there are lots of character points that aren't explained.
Yeah.
I mean, the most fleshed out character we have is Pedro. He's up to 88 Pedro points.
Yeah, he loves his sister and he loves his country and he will fight fascism. That's all I need. Yeah.
Oh, Johnny, I promise we only have one more page of notes.
And so Carmen throws the mandrake root into the fire, says, "You'll have to learn that even if it hurts." And then she starts doubling over in pain. And then we cut to the captain at the doctor who has just given a shot to the stuttering guy that's going to pretty much kill him.
Oh, yeah. He walks in. Dude is dead. Mm-hmm. He's like, "I had to do it. It was the only choice."
And the captain's like, "Why didn't you just obey me?" And he was like, "I can't." And this was my favorite line of questioning. "Obey just for the sake of obeying without questioning. That's just something I can't do."
That's what I cannot do. As a man, I cannot do. Yeah. Or something like that.
You may be able to do that, but I cannot. There's so many different forms of rebelling against authority in this movie. Ophelia does it with her coping mechanism. Mercedes does that through actual rebellion, even though it's not what the rebels are doing. She does it in her own way. Mm-hmm. And the doctor does it by pretty much just disobeying an order and being like, "I can't obey just for the sake of obeying. I have to question why I need to follow you." I think that's just kind of like...
That doesn't mesh well with fascism.
No, it doesn't. And the captain doesn't like it either, to the point where he kills the doctor as he's walking away.
Shoot him. I mean, like, all the doctor did was be like, "Maybe you Google Bing and look up having a spine.
Maybe it's okay if someone questions your authority because that gives you a chance to be challenged. And when we are challenged as individuals, we have the opportunity to grow because we can ask ourselves those questions. We can say, why do I choose to believe what I believe? Why do I react in the way that I do? Why do I shoot doctors who kill people who I have just ultimately tortured?
Oh, man. When he got shot, I'm like, oh, it's coming. And then it's like, we need a doctor. And I'm like, wah, wah, Captain V.
Yeah. Like the first thing he gets someone in the rebellion who stutters.
Yep.
He shoots the doctor right before his son is
going
to be born.
It ain't going well, Captain.
Yeah. And yeah, they show Carmen is giving birth. It's bloody. It's not going well. And the baby is born. He has a son, but Carmen is dead.
She really got a raw end.
Agreed.
We're back in his office.
Yeah. But the rebel was saying that there was someone in the mill who was working. It's very obvious Mercedes is like worried. She's kind of panicking.
Like he's like, "I'm on to someone. Who could I be on to, Mercedes?"
Yeah. "Can you get me some booze from the storage room?" And she's like, "Yeah." And she walks away and he's like, "Oh, aren't you forgetting something? The key to the storage room, which I am the only one who has the copy of, right?"
Dun, dun. Done.
So she grabs it and then she gets all of her stuff. She goes to Ophelia to say, I gotta leave. And then Ophelia's
like, "Take me with you. Take me with you. No, no, you can't go. You can't go.
I implore you to reconsider."
Okay. Yeah. It makes me so mad.
Yeah.
Like she's like, no, you can't go with me. And then they're walking away from the camp.
Right. Again, they leave. To be fair, this probably doesn't go onto the ding pile, to the pile of like the counter where Ophelia leaves without someone questioning her because they leave.
I mean, an adult knew where she was going.
Yeah. But they also leave and then they get captured.
Like immediately. And it's supposed to be this big jump scare. And they're like, she's like, "Oh, you hear something." But she's got this big umbrella because now it's raining all the time because it's towards the climax and it has to rain all the time.
Right.
And she's like, "Oh, no, it was nothing." This is Mercedes talking about her. She turns and there's Captain, followed by an officer who looks like every Spanish air quotes man in this film who isn't a lead, has a mustache and looks like Hercules Poirot, like all of them. There's like skinny Hercules Poirot. And there's kind of tall and slightly chubbier Hercules Poirot. They don't got names. They just stand around reading lottery numbers and ignoring women escaping.
Okay. So they leave. They get captured. And Mercedes gets put or into the room where she's being tortured.
Yeah.
Where the stutter guy was being tortured.
Yeah. It's all the same. It's like they only have one barn. Only one good place to torture people.
Apparently.
So they store the tobacco and stuff in there, but they also store their victims. All right.
And Ophelia gets put back into her room.
She gets slapped in the face.
Yeah. And he says, if anybody comes after her, you kill her first.
Yeah.
Because this guy's a dick.
Yeah, he is. He's a full bag of them.
Mm-hmm. And so we then see him down with Mercedes.
He's about to start giving her the same, "I like to torture people, so this is how I torture people," talk that he gave to, Stutter McKenzie.
Yeah. But Mercedes, you know how she folds that knife in her apron? Mm-hmm. She unfolds it, unties her hands.
He's just stroking his torture weapons. He's like, look at my oily hammer and my hooky stick with a handle.
At one point, he says, "You found my greatest weakness," which is pride, which really it's not. It's ignorance or thinking that the people around you couldn't go ahead and. Yeah. I mean, seriously.
He says something like, "Just a woman."
Yeah,
like he says that phrase to her, and I was like, mm-hmm.
Well, this woman grabs the knife and stabs him repeatedly, and she even says this really awesome line that says, "You won't be the first pig I gutted."
Yeah, so that's good.
Yeah, so that whole this automatically takes me back to the moment when she was like, "Oh, I feel like a coward, Pedro," and she's not.
She really isn't. She's had to be stronger than most characters in this mm-hmm. film, especially if she was going to, like, get through freaking Captain. Like, literally get through him. Mm-hmm. She cut his face up, y'all!
This was 2 years before The Dark Knight, as in Heath Ledger having his cut up face.
This guy had a full half Joker going on.
Yeah.
A full half Joker. My notes say, "Do you want to know how I got these scars? Patriarchy." I'm sorry, no, I reference it. It's just so many women being oppressed by like so many dudes. And I know it's like the fascists and like the poor downtrodden people, but it's really easy to be like dudes and chicks and like get that all up in my head about it.
Right.
Oh,
right.
P.S. Have you noticed? And I know you said that there are other servants, but they just leave that baby laying around while mm-hmm. all of this business is going on.
Yeah, I'm almost certain that they're taking care of the baby at mm-hmm. some point.
Okay, so she cuts his face and walks out of the barn.
Yeah. Why she wouldn't just kill him, I don't know. Like, stab it in his throat. I mean, at one point, he even, like, showed himself slicing his throat while he was shaving on the glass. Like he's taking the shave, and he's just running it across his throat.
He's been dreaming of his death throughout this entire film.
Right.
You just see him riddled with his own death.
Yeah. She could have done that to him.
He might have taken it as a favor.
Yeah. But she runs away and
she doesn't run. She speed walks. She's like,
and then one of the guys is like, "Hey, did he let her go?" And the other guy that picked up the lottery ticket.
30338. He just throws it to the ground.
Lottery ticket comes back into play.
Right. And then Captain stumbles out and he's like, "Get her!" And like they're like, "What the crap?" And he's like, "Get her!" And his monster face. It's like, blah, 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 blah. Because he's got flappy lips now.
Yeah. And she runs out.
Full runs.
Into the woods. And she gets into a clearing, but
she's after her. Their horses were ready to go. They were on the horses chasing her up a hill. She was being chased by horses.
Yeah. And yet, so they get her into this clearing where they surround her and she's ready to like kill herself. And guess who shows up? Our favorite.
He's getting full Pedro points right now.
I think we're up to 1 million.
Oh, at least 1 million plus one. Mm-hmm. I want to be his plus one. No, just kidding. Sorry. I don't mean it.
You don't have to convince me.
And Jonathan edits it later on, and it sounds like I'm totally macking on Pedro, though. I'll feel bad. All right.
But the rebels come out, and they kill all but one of the guards. And then, you know, it's this touching moment between Mercedes and Pedro. And then we see Ophelia in her room, and the Fawn has decided to give her another chance.
Okay. you can come on in. Just have to do one final task.
And you have to be entirely obedient. Like, the obedience is kind of stressed on from his end.
Yeah, he says, no. I actually wrote it down in Spanish. I was like, no más preguntas. No más preguntas.
Right.
Which is no more questions.
Right. Cannot disobey. Has to do exactly what she's told. And she's told to get her brother and take him into the labyrinth. Now, the captain is in his quarters and
he's sewing up his face. It's actually pretty bad.
Yeah.
I'm going to give him that. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. But he's still a dick.
Yeah. No, let him be the villain.
Yeah.
But like, sometimes villains got swagger.
Yeah. And so he's sewing up the gape in his wound. He finishes, takes a shot, and he's like,
God, it's so fun to watch him take that shot.
Right.
Like, because he's put a bandage over his wound, and like, he takes the shot and just soaks in. And it stays true to realism for me, which is like, I'm like, yes, biology would do that.
Yeah.
He just sewed that up with twine. That ain't watertight.
Yeah.
Or brandy tight or whatever he's drinking.
Right, right.
It's not water because it burns real bad.
Right.
Oh, it's so good.
And Ophelia's hiding on the table.
Beside the table.
Beside the table. Yeah. And she has this piece of chalk, this chalk that we know can open up a door. And she puts it on the table, but this meticulous motherfucker sees that. And he grabs the chalk and he looks at it and he like pours himself another drink.
And then he crushes the chalk.
Oh, yeah.
And then he drops it.
Oh, and he starts looking around for someone because he thinks someone's in there. But then that's when one of the soldiers comes in and says, hey, one of our guys came back. He's alive. And so.
From the rodeo. Shot off a horse rodeo is what I called that. Sorry.
That's okay. The captain leaves.
She pulls out the vial of medicine
that the doctor was giving. Eyedropper, just a couple of drops in there.
Two drops, no more.
Yeah.
Two.
She takes the whole thing and she's kind of taking her time. I mean, I would just pour the whole thing in there.
She's like counting. She's like, I want to make sure it's more than two. One, two, three, four. Like, you want you to put in like 10 drops and you're like, all right, you could have just poured the bottle. It's a liquid and you're not doing science.
Right. And then she goes and grabs her brother and then she's like, I need you to come with me and everything's going to be okay. And again, lingering longer than she has to.
She's got more dramatic pauses than like an emo dog show. More dramatic pauses than an emo dog show. Jokes for days.
It's a good one.
Thanks.
That's a good one. So she grabs her brother and she goes, she has to like hide because he comes back.
Yeah.
He's about to take a drink and instead he stops and looks at his watch and then he takes a drink from his shotgun. And she's like backing up slowly out of the room and then an explosion goes off and he turns around and he sees her.
She's like lit up by the explosion and he's like, what are you doing?
Yeah. And so she runs off and I think that's when the sedative kicks in for him.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of stumbling around.
Yeah. He can't immediately take off. And she's like, she has to walk down this set of stairs, right? And she's like taking her little timid time doing it. And I'm like, chick, a man with a gun is coming after you.
Right. But she's like a kid trying to hold a baby.
Use the handrail.
I don't know if I could hold a baby with one hand even when I was younger.
Youth football.
Oh, okay.
It's the head in the hand, body under your arm. Former nanny. All right.
So she makes it out of the mill. The captain's following her. And he actually sees the rebels attacking the mill. And he sees her leave. And he has two choices. He can either stay and fight the rebels or he can go after his son. He's going after his son. And so she goes into the maze.
Are you shocked?
Am I shocked?
Every time you can shock or applaud at it, but she ran back to the maze. Because she's always running to the maze. They should never have to look for her. She's in the maze.
Right. She goes into the maze. She gets lost in the maze. And she comes to a dead end. And then the maze opens itself up and lets her go into the center. And then it closes itself back up as the captain gets lost. And
It gives her exactly 15 seconds of a head start.
Right.
At the center.
And so she goes to the center. The fawn's there. He's holding that golden dagger that she got from the pale man.
Totally give me the baby now.
Yeah. We just need a small pinprick from his finger so that way we can open up the portal. That's all we need.
You just need the blood of an innocent.
Seriously. Why are you freaking out about this? She's like, no, I'm not going to go ahead and let you cut up my brother for my own sake.
Here's the thing. There's this little bit of me that's just like, let him cut him a little bit. Just, I mean, like, he's not going to die from a little blood. They take blood from babies all the time.
I know. I feel like if they really wanted a test, then they would be like, we're going to have to take your old brother. Like, going to have to sacrifice him to open up the portal.
Then that makes sense. But he wanted to do it and he wanted to take the baby out of her hands. And I could see where she was just like, no.
I will be honest. I don't think I would have actually. I would have been like, yeah, that totally makes sense. I'm running from a scary dude. And, you know, it's not going to kill him. And he'll survive. I mean, he's a baby. If I was her in that situation as a little kid, I probably would have been like, yeah, that totally makes sense. Go ahead and do that. I probably would have. Anyways.
So here's the thing. Captain rounds the corner. He sees her talking at air, which lends itself to the this ain't real narrative. Right. He demands the baby. She hands him over. He's like,
I'm going to shoot you. And so I do.
It's nonplus. There's like no fanfare. She's shot in the guts.
Yeah. And he walks out of the maze. Just walks right out of the maze to the mill that was being attacked by his enemies.
Like, what did he? He had no game plan.
No. Like when he gets out, he sees that they're all there, Mercedes and Pedro, right at the forefront. And he holds out his son and Mercedes takes him. And he's just like, he tells Mercedes, make sure that he knows the time that I died. Make sure he knows. And Mercedes cuts him off and says he won't.
My favorite line of the entire film. Line. No, he won't even know your name.
And that's when it seems to hit him how it was so important for his son, for the family thing to go through, that it's not going to happen. And that's like for all of the stoicism that the actor, great actor, by the way, don't know his name, but he did a really good job being very stoic. Like there's this moment where it just kind of hits.
Oh, yeah. And it's so great because it is only like half of a second, because the second she goes, he won't even know your name. Pedro got himself a second million Pedro points because he just shoots him just below his the captain's right eye.
Yeah.
And his eye like sweat, like rolls up and turns red. And his other eye is like totally still in the moment. And he's like, oh, and he just drops. And you're like, yes.
Yeah.
That is the closure I need. Bringing families together. The captain making it happen. Okay, so let's go back to the little girl dying on the ground.
Okay, her blood is getting, is pulling out from underneath her. She's got one hand in the opening.
For some reason, her nose is bleeding. She got shot in the guts, but...
And Mercedes comes out and she just like starts sitting next to her. We see blood from Ophelia drop down into the pool. We see the full moon and then something opens up.
Nothing physically opens up.
Right.
What happens is we go to her kind of awakening in, and you said it, but like red and gold together are gorgeous. And mm-hmm. there's just this red and gold theme, like richness of the upside down that she's now in.
Yeah. It kind of makes sense. I mean, the king is the king of the underworld, and you see her mom there and you see the two dead fairies, Cheech and Chong, they are in there, but in the credits it says RIP.
Yeah.
So it's like,
oh, and they're all blonde. Did you notice that?
Yeah. But not her.
No.
She's not. But
maybe you get blonde.
Yeah. Her dad also, or the king looked like super old.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it ends on the creepy lullaby.
Like,
what
girl.
Should I worry? It ends on the creepy lullaby. I was trying to do a thing.
Nope. I like it when a joke just carries. Just let it carry us all the way.
And it says that Ophelia went on to rule her kingdom with grace and love, and there are still traces of her that can be found on the earth, and we see a flower bloom.
Okay, so here's what my notes say about her lasting effect on earth. She saved her brother, to her credit.
Right.
And she saved a tree.
Right.
That's it, as far as I can tell. That's it. Good job. I mean, not bad.
Yeah.
People have done worse.
Yeah.
But, So you had asked me, what would I change?
Well, in the last episode, we had that, like, what is the one thing that you wouldn't change? What is the one thing you would change? I was just wondering if that's something that we want to keep.
I like it.
Yeah. Because the one thing that I would change is the stuttering guy not taking the captain's offer. Like, he's a rebel.
If you're a stutterer.
Yeah.
And I practically am when I get nervous or excited. Like, you're still hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
You just got a little impediment.
Right.
That's fine. Yeah, and I could see that. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I would have put in just once or twice the way she gets to the labyrinth past the guards. And what would I take out? I would take out that green dress so that I could have it. That dress was cute.
Yeah.
Would you recommend this to a friend? And if you would, what kind of setting would you share it in?
This would probably be, like most of my movies, I would just say, hey, you want a creepy movie that you can show to teenagers around Halloween or on Halloween? I would probably say show them Pan's Labyrinth, because it's international. It is exceptional in so many ways. And I know we kind of rag on some of the films that we watch, but these are films that we love.
Yeah.
In some respect.
For some. I like the fact that we did comedies, but since we chose to go more dramatic this time, I'm like super down for this in particular, because it was incredibly well thought out. All the money they made off of it, they earned every cent of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't believe I haven't seen any of really of those actors go Hollywood. Not really.
Maybe they're big names in Spain or in Latinx countries. I know Doug Jones is a huge, like, seriously. Have you seen Hocus Pocus?
Who's he in Hocus Pocus?
Bette Midler's character, Winifred's dead boyfriend, who she brings back to life.
Shut the front door.
It is one of the few movies where he actually speaks, and he says one of the best lines at the very end, where he like cuts up. You remember?
Yes, his mouth was all so shut.
Yeah, okay. And he cuts it open, and he calls her a.
It was glorious.
Oh, it's Hocus Pocus. Another That's good one.
Glorious.
Yes.
Okay, I would show this movie to people like 13 to 17 years old. I would show it on movie night at camp because of all the forest themes.
Yeah.
Ooh, I would let that summer air in, and I'd light a candle, like mm-hmm. a pine scented candle.
Yeah.
Not trying to creep them out. I'm trying to bring in that cave vibe from earlier with Pedro.
See, it all goes back to Pedro.
Maybe I would show it to a guy named Pedro. I'd be like, no, probably wouldn't. Anyways, yes, I would approve and recommend this movie to anybody.
Yes, yes.
I would probably not for younger kiddos. And I do think it should come with a disclaimer that although it's Pan's Labyrinth and all the labyrinths we know are, you know, full mm-hmm. of magic babies, like, you know. You're not waiting for David Bowie to show up on this one.
which is a shame, because, I mean, David Bowie.
He only improves things.
I know.
He's like table salt. It's only getting better if you add Bowie. And I think that since we've now gone into tangent land, maybe this is where our episode lands. Yeah?
Yeah.
You got anything else to add? Anything you want to?
No, not that I can think of. This was great. Thank you so much to all of our wonderful listeners who are joining us for this and our many episodes to come.
Yes. Thank you for joining us, applauders. And I don't have a catchphrase.
That's okay.
That could be our catchphrase. Nobody's done it before. Thanks for joining us. I don't have a catchphrase.
You have reached the end of this maze of distracted conversations, applauder. Thank you for listening to part 3 of our non-linear review of Guillermo del Toro's Pan's Labyrinth. Hey, this is your audio engineer and holiday horror survivor, Jonathan, thanking you for keeping your eyes on the road, not on your palm devices, because that stuff is scary while traveling. Yeah. I said palm devices. Are we not in 2006 anymore? When was this review recorded again? Did you know we totally had this episode in our vault until it was time to release this beast of a review out to the public? We've already recorded the next episode, and there's no plan to slow down through your sluggish, cold commutes. Want to applaud our efforts to provide actual coping mechanisms during your holidays? Well, you're in luck. It's December, and it's the perfect time to commit to a woman-owned startup that implores you to reconsider us as worth your small contribution to remain ad-free into the new year. Search for us on Patreon or click on the Become an Applauder link to get involved with extra blog content, unbleeped high-quality episodes, and more. Are you wishing for a return to blockbuster form? After flying with us through episode 2, Tim Burton's Batman Returns, and into this indie foreign fantastic film? Well, we've towered over our library of holiday films, and we're pretty sure that the next one is going to lift your spirits with a bit of action-packed nostalgia. We'll be back in only 1 week with episode 4. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.